Thank you, operator, and hello, everyone. Welcome to our fourth quarter 2017 conference call. With me today is our Chief Executive Officer, Aengus Kelly, and our Chief Financial Officer, Pete Juhas. Before we begin today's call, I would like to remind you that some statements made during this conference call, which are not historical facts, may be forward-looking statements. Forward-looking statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. AerCap undertakes no obligation other than that imposed by law to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements to reflect future events, information, or circumstances that arrive after this call. Further information concerning issues that could materially affect performance can be found in AerCap's earnings release dated February 14, 2018. A copy of the earnings release and conference call presentation are available on our website at aercap.com. This call is open to the public and is being webcast simultaneously at aercap.com and will be archived for replay. I will now turn the call over to Aengus Kelly.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our 2017 fourth quarter earnings call. I am pleased to report another quarter of consistent earnings and profitability. During Q4, we generated earnings per share of $1.67 and net income of $266 million. For the full year, EPS of $6.43 and net income of $1.1 billion. During Q4, the AerCap platform successfully executed 100 aircraft transactions, including 46 leases, 25 purchases, and the sale of 29 aircraft. More than one transaction every day. Our utilization rate remained high during the year at over 99%. We continue to see good demand for aircraft on a global basis, evidenced by another year of strong RPK growth of 7.6% per IATA. As we look into 2018, we expect to see this growth trend continue. We have not observed a decline in demand due to the recent increase in oil prices. Of course, it should be noted that for many carriers, a significant portion of the rise in oil prices has been offset by U.S. dollar weakness. During 2017, we saw significant demand in the Europe, Middle East, and Africa region and a return to growth in the Russian market. We remained active sellers of mid-life aircraft in the quarter, selling 27 owned and two managed aircraft. These aircraft had an average age of 14 years. We achieved an average gain on sale of approximately 8%. We also agreed the sale of an $800 million portfolio of 21 aircraft to Peregrine Aviation, an investment entity established by NCB Capital, which is a subsidiary of the largest bank in Saudi Arabia. We expect the sales of the individual aircraft to close primarily in Q1 2018. This, along with the continued delivery of new technology aircraft, has reduced the average age of our fleet to 6.8 years at the end of 2017, down from 7.4 years 12 months earlier. We expect this to move towards the low sixes over the next couple of years. Our average remaining lease term is also trending positively. It now stands at 6.9 years, up from 6.4 years 12 months ago. In relation to aircraft purchases, we expect to deliver approximately $6 billion of aircraft assets in 2018, reinforcing the return to asset growth, which began again in Q4. This level of deliveries may be impacted by recent developments on the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engine. It is too early to say what impact this latest issue will have on our 2018 delivery profile. What we can say is that the A320neo is delivering excellent fuel burn savings for our customers, and it continues to be in demand. This is evidenced by the strength of our forward order placements. AerCap has now placed 178 A320neos. As a result of the demand we see for the aircraft, we exercised a follow-on option for 50 A320neos in December. On the liability side of our business, we continue to lengthen the average tenor of our debt. Our last four unsecured bond deals raised $3 billion at attractive rates with a five-year, a seven-year, and two 10-year maturities. We continue to manage our balance sheet conservatively, ending the year with $9.6 billion of available liquidity and an adjusted debt equity ratio of 2.8 to 1. Our share repurchase program continued during the quarter. We repurchased 5.3 million shares for $272 million, which brings the total number of shares repurchased since June 2015 to approximately 64 million shares at a cost of $2.8 billion. This gives an average price of $44.08 per share and has resulted in over 30% of the company being repurchased. We are also announcing a new share repurchase program of $200 million. Of course, with such a large portfolio, we always have issues with individual customers. However, on a global basis, we continue to see robust demand for aircraft, both from airlines and investors, as well as a supportive financing environment, both from the banks and the capital markets. With that, I will hand it over to Pete before we have the Q&A session.
Great. Thanks, Gus. Good morning, everyone. I'll start on slide 5 of the presentation. For the fourth quarter, our reported net income was $266 million. For the fourth quarter of 2016, we had higher than normal net income of $365 million, due primarily to a couple of large one-time items, including a termination fee and a gain on a note receivable that was repaid earlier than we had expected. For the full year 2017, our net income was $1,076 million, compared to $1,047 million in 2016. Our diluted earnings per share for the fourth quarter was $1.67, compared with $2.01 in the fourth quarter of 2016, which was also higher than normal due to the same factors as net income. For the full year, we saw an increase of 16% in our EPS from $5.52 in 2016 to $6.43 in 2017. This was primarily driven by strong earnings, as well as the repurchase of 48.7 million shares during 2016 and 2017. On slide 6, over the past year, we've seen a 16% increase in our book value per share, from $49.33 in 2016 to $57.20 at the end of the year. Again, that's been achieved through a combination of strong earnings as well as substantial share repurchases over the past year. During 2017, we repurchased 23.7 million shares for just over $1.1 billion. And as Gus mentioned, since June of 2015, we've bought back over 30% of our outstanding shares. On slide 7, our total revenue was $1,263 million for the fourth quarter and $5,037 million for the full year. Our basic lease rents for the fourth quarter were $1,035 million. As we've seen in prior quarters, basic lease rents decreased primarily due to the sale of midlife and older aircraft over the past year, which reduced the average age of our fleet. Our maintenance revenues for the fourth quarter were $163 million, a slight increase over the past year. We had higher than normal maintenance revenues in both the fourth quarter of 2016 and the fourth quarter of 2017. In 2017, this was driven primarily by lease terminations, including as a result of the Monarch Airlines default. Some of the benefits that we saw come through the maintenance revenue line were offset by higher leasing expenses this quarter and will also be offset by additional leasing expenses in 2018 related to these aircraft. Our net gain on sales was $49 million for the fourth quarter, compared to $59 million a year ago. In the fourth quarter, we continued to sell midlife and older aircraft at attractive prices. For the full year, we had $229 million of gains on sales of around $2.4 billion. Our other income was $17 million for the fourth quarter, a decrease from $89 million last year. As I mentioned earlier, the other income line was elevated in the fourth quarter of 2016 as a result of those one-time items. Turning to slide 8, our net interest margin was $760 million for the quarter and $3,096 million for the full year. Our average lease assets were down for the full year, but were up by about $550 million for the fourth quarter of 2017 compared to the fourth quarter of 2016. This was due largely to the ramp-up of deliveries in the fourth quarter. During 2017, we took delivery of $5.3 billion worth of new aircraft, including over $2 billion in the fourth quarter alone, and we sold $2.4 billion of older and midlife aircraft during the year. The net effect of this activity was to bring down the average age of our fleet from 7.4 years at the end of 2016 to 6.8 years at the end of 2017. Since the new aircraft have lower yields than older aircraft, when we sell older aircraft and replace them with deliveries of new aircraft, this reduces our overall yield as well as our net spread. Now, of course, we've been selling these older aircraft to improve the quality of our fleet. We've also reinvested the proceeds from selling these aircraft at a premium to book value, to fund a significant amount of share buybacks at a discount to book value. Our net spread was 8.8% for the fourth quarter, 9% for the year, which is in line with the guidance we gave at our Investor Day in November. In addition to the decrease in average age, the other factor that impacted our net spread for the full year was the increase in our average cost of debt from 3.7% to 3.9% as we continue to issue new longer-term bonds that replaced expiring shorter-term ILFC notes. Slide 9. Here's some additional detail on our aircraft sales activity during the quarter. During the fourth quarter, we sold 27 of our owned aircraft that were an average of 14 years old. We also placed 2 aircraft on long-term leases and reclassified them from operating to finance leases. As Gus mentioned, in December, we announced the sale of an aircraft portfolio to NCB Capital, and our sales in the fourth quarter included 4 aircraft from that portfolio. We expect most of the remaining aircraft sales from this portfolio to be completed during the first quarter of 2018. Our net gain on sales was $49 million for the quarter and $229 million for the full year. This represents a margin of 8% for the quarter and around 10.5% for the full year. Our ability to sell significant amounts of older and midlife aircraft at a gain illustrates the strong demand for these assets that we continue to see from investors. Over the long term, gain on sales has generally been in the 5-10% range, although as you've seen, it can move around a fair amount depending on the composition of the asset sales. The fourth quarter was a record one for AerCap in terms of both the number of aircraft deliveries and the amount of CapEx. In the fourth quarter, we took delivery of 25 new aircraft, including 15 from the A320neo family, 4 Airbus A350s, and 6 Boeing 787s. That brought our total deliveries for the year to 58 aircraft and our total CapEx for the year to $5.3 billion. Next slide. Our maintenance rights expenses were $76 million for the fourth quarter, down from $95 million for the fourth quarter of 2016. This was driven by the level of maintenance activity as well as the lower maintenance rights intangible asset balance. Our other leasing expenses were $66 million for the quarter, an increase from $49 million last year. This was primarily the result of expenses related to the Air Berlin and Monarch defaults, and as discussed at the Investor Day, we will have some costs associated with these going into 2018. Our SG&A expenses were $96 million for the quarter, basically flat compared to the fourth quarter of 2016. We've been putting in place a new equity awards program to replace the old program from 2014 that is maturing. The overall cost of the new program will be lower, but there is some front-loading of expenses associated with the new program that led to a higher stock-based compensation expense in the fourth quarter. For the full year 2018, we expect stock-based comp expense to be in line with 2017, but it will be front-loaded with about two-thirds of that expense coming in the first half of the year. Overall, we expect our SG&A expense to be down slightly in 2018 compared to 2017. We had asset impairments of $10 million this quarter. This primarily related to lease terminations and was more than offset by maintenance revenue recognized as a result of these terminations. Slide 11, we continue to maintain a very strong liquidity position. As of December 31st, we had available liquidity of $9.6 billion. Together with our operating cash flows, that gives us total sources of $12.8 billion, which is 1.4 times our cash needs of $9.3 billion over the next 12 months. This amounts to excess coverage of around $3.5 billion. So, to wrap up, 2017 was another year of strong operating and financial performance for the company. We completed 402 aircraft transactions, more than one a day. We continue to improve the quality of our fleet by selling $2.4 billion of midlife and older aircraft and taking delivery of 58 new technology aircraft. We've placed around 95% of our forward order book through the end of 2019. We generated over $5 billion of revenue, over $3 billion of operating cash flow, close to $1.1 billion of earnings, and record EPS of $6.43. And we returned over $1.1 billion of capital to create long-term value for our shareholders. With that, now we'll turn it over for Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity. We will now take our first question from Catherine O'Brien from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. So I'm just going to ask one, and then I'm going to hand it over to my colleague, Mike Lindenberg, for a follow-up. So do you think if we do see rates start to rise, some of the capital that has more recently been attracted to the business for the relative yields might start to exit? And if they do you think the more established leasing companies have the capacity to pick up the aircraft that could come to the market, or do you think there might end up being some distortion?
I think some of the capital is here to stay, Catherine, but I do think there's quite a few tourists in the sector who have arrived here due to the paucity of yields available in other asset classes. So as other asset classes, the yields on those increase, I have no doubt that we will see money leave the sector. I do think we'll see increased opportunity for people like ourselves if we do continue to see rising rates.
Oh, and hey, Gus, just Mike Lindenberg here. I want to ask you, this was a comment that you made at a conference a few weeks ago, and I don't know if it was out of context or not. It was your view on, you know, Boeing's, you know, this new mid-market airplane. You talked about how you thought that it would be targeted more towards leisure-dominated seasonal routes, and therefore, you know, it would be tough to get a wider user base. Is that your thoughts? I mean, is that and how did you come to that conclusion, or maybe that was even taken out of context? Because when I saw that, I thought that was it didn't seem right, but maybe there's more to it.
It's slightly out of context, Mike, but I mean, just briefly to comment on the airplane, I would say that we are leasing many airplanes into the market where that aircraft will go. Mm-hmm. That mission is done by A330s. 767s mm-hmm. and A321s, mainly mm-hmm. older 767s and A330s. For a new mm-hmm. airplane to successfully dislodge those very reliable, tried and tested assets, it will have to come in at a competitive price.
Okay. So it's a crowded space, and they're going to have to differentiate themselves in order to get a bite from someone like yourselves. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, thank you.
No problem.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We will now take our next question from Jason Arnold from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering if you can speak about how the $800 million Peregrine sale came to fruition. Was this a marketed portfolio, or was this kind of an inbound from them? And then should we expect similar gain on sale on those aircraft as we've seen recently?
The transaction itself came about through, you know, a series of one-on-one discussions that we had. It did come actually from an inbound call initially, but there was a portfolio of aircraft that we were looking to move, and we've got a great working relationship now with our partners at NCB Capital, and so we were delighted to be able to close the deal.
Great. And then, you know, on the gain on sale side, I mean, 5 to 10% seem kind of within that range?
Yeah, that's the range.
Okay. And then I guess another one on the rising rate question, you know, key input into determining lease rates is interest rates. So maybe you can speak a bit on how you'd expect lease rates to trend here, assuming this isn't another false start on the upside on rates.
Yeah, now assuming that it isn't another false start, exactly, and what you see is that for the forward lease agreements coming off our forward order, all of those will have an interest rate adjustment component to them. So if rates rise, then there's a corresponding rise in the lease rental to offset the rise in rates. Now, more generally then, on used airplanes, there tends to be about a six-month lag between the rise in rates and the rise in lease rates. It's also a six-month lag on the way down as well. but it will only impact a few airplanes. It won't have any material impact. The key really is not the magnitude that they get, the ultimate level that they get to, but it's the velocity they move at. And if we see a reasonably controlled grind higher of lease rates, that'll be a good thing. We're assuming that that reflects a stronger global economy with improved GDP outlook will lead to some inflation of the asset value also. And as I mentioned earlier, it will probably lead to the departure of some of the tourist capital that has come into the space. Of course, the big risk would be if you hadn't hedged yourself before rates began to rise and you were running an open book, which, as you know, AerCap does not.
Excellent. Great color. And like you said, I mean, obviously a good thing to be asset rich and have inflation potential kick in. So thanks for the color.
No problem.
Our next question comes from Gary Leibowitz from Wells Fargo Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Gus, it looks like your utilization in the fourth quarter was down around to 98% or so. Just wondering, as you remarket some of the Air Berlin and Monarch planes, how quickly can you get that back up to your usual sort of mid-99 level?
Yeah, Gary, that should be coming up. I mean, you're right, that's the primary driver of it during the fourth quarter as we transition those aircraft. So we should see it going back up to 99 for the 99 plus during 2018.
By mid-2018, all those planes will be back in service?
Yeah, they should be, if not before.
Okay. And also, Gus, just, you know, a broad question. I mean, there's been a lot of chatter out there about possible lessors looking to sell portfolios or large pieces of their portfolio. Can you just go over your appetite for large-scale M&A, and would you entertain deals that are not as accretive to earnings as buying back your own stock?
I mean, Gary, look, we're always looking at allocation of capital. There are four avenues for it. We can do sale leasebacks in the market. We can buy from the manufacturers. We can buy another company. We can buy ourselves. I'm excluding repayment of debt because we have delevered quite a bit over the last few years. And so we're always looking at what's the most attractive alternative. And we've been very disciplined stewards of capital. If we believe that buying ourselves is a greater benefit to the company long term, then we'll do that. But, you know, look, we look at all the different opportunities, be it, say, leasebacks. If interest rates rise a bit, I think we'll see more opportunity there. And the OEMs at the moment, they're fairly full on the M&A. We haven't seen much yet in that regard. You know, over the last couple of years, we've looked at all the different processes, but we've been very disciplined, Gary. So you can see our behavior over the last 3 years, and we didn't pull the trigger on any of the M&A processes and bought back 30% of AerCap instead.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Helane Becker from Cowen. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Just a question on the delivery schedule as I look at, I guess it's slide 16. The E2s and the E190s that are delivering beginning next year, can you just talk about the appetite you're seeing for those aircraft, number one? And number two, can you just comment, I don't think you did, or at least I didn't see it in the press release, what percent of the order book you're placed forward at this point? Thank you.
Sure. On the E2s, we've got either under lease contract or LOI 40% of the E2 order book. So there is, and there's quite a number of discussions going on out there around the world. I think it's clear that the recent acquisition, or the acquisition that is in progress of Bombardier by Airbus, validates the space. And of course, the public interest that Boeing has expressed in Embraer also validates the space. In terms of the placement activity on an overall basis, you know, we have placed many airplanes way into the future, but if you just look out over the next 24 months to the end of 2019, we're 95% placed.
That's great. Thank you
over
so much. All my other great. Thank you. All my other questions were asked and answered.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Ross Harvey from Davy. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. I've got two. So firstly, on that delivery schedule, I noticed that there was 5 aircraft for the MAX that are now scheduled for 2018 delivery versus 2019, which was previously guided at the Q3. I'm just wondering what's behind that, and in the context of the GTF issues, could there be further change in that delivery schedule? And maybe, you know, you might just talk about how much you can actually potentially benefit from those engine issues around your unplaced aircraft for 2018 and 19. And just a short one for Pete. Can you just discuss any further funding plans that you might have for 2018, and particularly in the context of the expected rate increases?
Sure, Ross. Let me start with the move of the MAXs. That was really just due to a customer wanting to accelerate those. So we were able to do it for them. So that worked out well. In terms of funding, and then I'll let Gus comment more generally on the GTF. In terms of our funding for the year, so as you saw, as Gus mentioned, we've done some longer-term funding. We tried to front-load that, but we do expect to come back to the market with a number of unsecured bond deals during the year, and then we've got a bunch of secured funding to do. So given that it's a pretty heavy CapEx year for us, we'll be back to the market a number of times.
Turning to the GTF, to answer your question, you know, it is a minority share of the population that's impacted. It was a total of 43 engines on 32 aircraft, of which 21 aircraft have one of the engines on them. So the vast majority of the aircraft remain in service. The impact for us in our delivery schedule, as I said in my prepared comments, is just too early to tell at the moment, and we are working with Pratt & Whitney through the issues, though. Now, of course, you know, it does improve demand to some extent for existing aircraft that are available right now, but it's very rare that you would have an A320 available for lease in the current year, i.e. in 2018. As you know, we place all our airplanes 12 to 24 months out.
That's great. That's well understood. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Justine Fisher from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Justine.
Morning.
The first question I have is on the E2 placements. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of color about the mission that those aircraft are going to serve. I mean, are they replacing other aircraft of similar size, or are replacing aircraft for those airlines that were previous generation Embraers, or are those customers saying, great, we found a new mission for this, you know, a circa 100 seat market, and it's going to open up a new market for us? Because, and I mean, I'm asking to just get a little more color around how much demand there is for aircraft of that size for growth markets, as opposed to just maybe just replacing old technology.
Well, it's not a 100 seat market. The E2195 is where most of the activity is. And in a two-class configuration, you're in the mid-120s, and in a very dense configuration, you'll get up to 144. So it's not the 100-seat market. What we are seeing, of course, what is generating some interest in it is that Boeing and Airbus have left that market space sub-150 seats. And so we are seeing demand there for customers who are looking at that 120 to 140-seat space. And it's a mixture of missions. Some are connecting into a hub in a large domestic market. Others are, with the GTF engine on board and the fuel burn that it brings, are looking at some longer missions. So it's a mix.
Okay. And do you think that Boeing and Airbus left that market because it wasn't, they just didn't see the demand, or because they have production lines where they can make a lot more money selling the larger variants of their narrow bodies?
It's a combination of factors, Justine. The other thing, though, you have to remember is that the heart of the Boeing and Airbus families is the 320 and the 737. So those airplanes do well when they're upgauged. They improve the weight efficiency. But when they're downgauged, they become heavy airplanes like an A319, an A318, and a 737. And they're not as efficient. So that's one of the reasons Boeing and Airbus left. That because of the fact their planes are not as efficient, because they're derivatives of a bigger airplane going into a smaller market.
Okay, that's interesting. And then I have another question on lease terms, and this is something that we've been asking a few lessors to try and get color around the situation. But are you guys seeing lease terms have to change in the aircraft that you're placing as we see a more competitive environment? We hadn't heard as much about this a year or two ago, but then over the last few months I've heard a lot more about lessors having to give up some maintenance reserves or end of lease payments or upside downside payments with airlines. Are you guys having to change those terms in your negotiations?
But we're certainly never going to give up EOL payments, you know, whether you collect them through ongoing maintenance reserves or you collect them at the end of the lease is a different matter. You know, you have to recognize, of course, Justine, that we're not dealing with the credit quality of the industry that was there 12 years ago when, you know, you had an industry that was habitually losing money. We now have an industry where the average credit quality of the carrier is far superior. So I don't think people can look back and say, you know, I was getting maintenance reserves 12 years ago on a carrier. That carrier is a very different airline today, and so that is one of the elements that has led to a restructuring of some of the security packages for certain airlines, but under no circumstances are we waiving return conditions.
Okay, and then last question along that line, do you guys feel that when you are in the market selling assets, you can get a premium for assets with those very sort of well-written leases attached? Maybe those leases were written a few years ago that have better maintenance return conditions or something like that. Can you get a premium, a better premium above the metal because you guys have those leases and the buyers are more willing to buy those leases because they have some better older terms on them?
No, I think what goes into a lease is a lot more than that, how well a lease is written. There are many, many clauses within a lease around security, around enforceability of your rights, around the security package that you're allowed, that your lenders put on the asset. So it's not just about return conditions. That'd be a very simplistic look at it. I would say that a well-written lease ensures execution certainty. A poorly written lease, particularly when it comes to operating covenants around what the lessee is allowed to do with the airplane, you may well get a bid on the airplane, but when it comes to close, buyers may shy away. So there's a mix of things when it comes into to closing a lease. But clearly, of course, Justine, if you just have an absolute higher level of cash coming off the lease, you know, in lease rental, then you're going to get more for it. That's a fact.
Great. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We will take our next question from Scott Valentine from Compass Point. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. Just wanted to focus on the SG&A. I appreciate the color on the stock, you know, share-based compensation, the changes there. But looking at the linked quarter from the third quarter, I think the SG&A excluding share-based comp was about $58 million. And then for this quarter, it jumped to $67 million, just over $67 million. Just wondering if there's anything one time in there or if it's just a true-up of some other expenses, some accruals.
Yeah, sure. Really, it was one-time items, really employee-related ones, and a few costs related to our kind of final costs coming out of our move from Amsterdam to Dublin.
Okay.
Those are really the drivers of it.
That increase, about call it a $9 million increase linked quarter. Most of that was kind of one-time in nature?
Yeah, I'd look at that all as one-time.
Okay, all right. And then in terms of the $6 billion of CapEx, do you have I assume the cadence will be more back-end loaded given potential NEO issues. Is that a fair way to think? Maybe 70% back-end the second half of the year, 30% in the first half?
It will be more spread throughout the year, but depending on the delivery delays, that could push it back. Last year was very back-end loaded. We took delivery of 25 at the end, and, you know, out of 58 during the fourth quarter. So it's more spread out than that.
Okay, all right. And then just a final question. On the pace of sales, you obviously have the large start to the year, the $800 million transaction. How should we think about the $1 billion that you guys talked about on the Investor Day? It seems like you guys will go above that, assuming the environment stays about where it is and gain on sale premiums are coming in between 5 and 10%. Is that a fair assessment as well?
Yeah, so for this, at Investor Day, we talked about for this year, for 2018, $1.5 billion of sales. Oh. That's what we projected. I think that we're still on track for that amount. I wouldn't assume it's going to be more than that for the year, but I do think at this point, I would assume that that's front-end loaded.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
But I think $1.5 billion is still a good number.
Our next question comes from Kristine Liwag from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. In the quarter, depreciation expense as a percent of your flight equipment ticked down. Is 1.3% on a quarterly basis a fair run rate going forward, or was there timing that affected this in the quarter?
Yeah, it did tick down. I mean, it's ticking down really because of the new aircraft that we've got coming in. So if you look, if you go back to our investor day, Kristine, I think that the 5.5% that we estimated for 2018 overall, that's a blended rate for the whole year, and that includes the maintenance rights amortization, that's probably, that's still a good number to use.
And great. And broadly speaking, as your fleet gets younger, how does your depreciation policy change? And also, is there a particular age in which these new airplanes will have some sort of break in their metal value that you're expecting?
Yeah, so the policy itself doesn't change. I mean, the way we approach it is when we get new aircraft, we put them on the standard depreciation rate, which is, you know, 25-year useful life to 15% residual value. And then what happens is as they get older, so particularly at 15 years, when aircraft are coming up to 15 years, we look at all of them and assess them to say, you know, should we accelerate depreciation on this aircraft? And that's because at that point, we have a much better idea about the remaining useful life for that aircraft. It may be on an end-of-life lease, for example, where the return condition is low, that type of thing. And so I'd say it's really the 15-year plus where you see it, generally speaking. But there are instances where even before that, we'll have an idea, you know, on the future useful life of the aircraft, and we will accelerate depreciation. And bear in mind that we did do that on a lot of them. When we did the ILFC acquisition, we did put a number of aircraft on accelerated depreciation at that point. But generally speaking, I'd say it's around the 15-year mark where you start to see it changing.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Kevin Crissey from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for the time. I was hoping you could discuss airline profitability around the world and how it factors into your business decisions. By this, I mean collectively the airlines around the world are doing better than they have historically on average, and I'm wondering whether you think that's something that you plan to assume that is going to continue, or you're factored into your decisions on fleet and assume that maybe there'll be a return to the mean, which is lower return on invested capital for the airlines in currently. Thanks.
You know, we do think that there has been a significant improvement in the way most of the world's airlines are managed. Historically, airlines were viewed as a public good and were subject to interference by the state or other entities and were not run for profit. Therefore, most management teams at the time, the highlight of their management was to buy airplanes from Boeing and Airbus and put capacity into the system and just continue the problem. Over the course of the last 10 years, because of deregulation, the sale of state-owned carriers, and a more general awareness that this industry, if managed properly, can actually generate a sustainable return on capital, has made airline managers, I think, far more aware of all the costs in their structure and very keen to see what is the best way to add capacity to ensure that they continue with this run of profits. So I would be fairly optimistic that the current generation of airline management will be judicious in how much capacity they add and how they source that capacity, because they do believe that they can generate a sustainable return on their equity for their shareholders and not for the shareholders of Boeing and Airbus.
Thank you. And maybe to follow that up, I think you had a slide at Investor Day that talked about the utilization. It was an example, I think it was the 320 utilization and how being used more and basically more effectively, and it suggested that there's an increased need for more aircraft because they kind of run out of opportunity on the efficiency side. But it made me think that if they're better managers, if they were better managers, I was thinking that they should be, instead of increasing volume, they should be raising price. If my asset is being used entirely efficiently and I'm out for profits, why would I go buy more assets? Like, that seems like the old style of airline management as opposed to raising fares. So if you could talk about the balance, if airlines are smarter, whether they should be raising fares or going for more capacity.
Look, I think when it comes to the slide we showed there were two ways for airlines to increase the efficiency of the existing assets they had. One was to increase the daily utilization of the aircraft, which has been done, and secondly was to densify the airplanes and sell more seats. Now, as it goes to adding additional capacity beyond that, I think we look at it on a global basis. We're not focused on any one market at all. There can be variations in a given domestic market or an international market or a section of the international markets. But we would say overall that airlines are far more judicious when they add capacity than they have been in the past.
Thanks. Thanks for the response. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Scott Valentine from Compass Point. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks for taking my follow-up. Just a quick housekeeping question. What's the right tax rate to use for 18? I know in the press release you say for 17 it was 13.3%, and that reflects, you know, the change in U.S. tax law. Is that 13.3 a good number to use for 18 as well?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good number to use. It'll be somewhere around there, between 13 and 13.5, I'd say.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further comments, I would like to turn the call back to our speakers for any closing comments. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us for the call. We look forward to speaking to you again in 3 months' time.